What is the meaning now? Addicted.
There's various points to start this little chat from. I had a quick look, frankly, and chose to begin, well, more or less from the earliest memory, skate backwards and forwards, regardless, bring near anything at all from any era, say Bowie for instance, David Bowie. And back to God knows anyway. It's all about talking and listening. Mainly from a new device. Well, picture this. I've got a few options here. Also, let's see. The screen. Yeah, that's much nicer. Yes, must be nicer. Well, I guess Hollywood Avenue in Gosforth. That's a good point in my memory, my view, in my mind's eye. What was good about it? Well, you could see anything. Popping over to the cemetery, which was just across the road, is something a child likes to do. Before long, I was introduced to the grandparents at the top of the road on the Great North Road. My, I enjoyed that. We stayed there for Christmas, slept in front of the massive coal fire in the front room. The full family thing. That was epic, I loved it. And before long, we moved off onto Grange Estate, Broadway West. And take it off to the infant school there, as I recall. Making friends. I was on used to the big brother. But encountered friends at school. That was good, I mean, epic. I wasn't too long in there, off through a blur that the parents had between each other, apparently. Dad came back full of Christmas presents to make it up to everybody. And we exchanged, the council house exchange to a place in Rainham, Gillingham, Kent. A sober type of place compared to Gosforth. However, I enjoyed it, and were there 2 years. It's just a strange thing just cropped up in my mind regarding the Big Brother. Because when I first moved in there, right, made friends with allies with the guys that were knocking on the streets then, a few years older than me, probably a year younger than David, that sort of age. If I was 8, see, you'd work the rest out yourself, I'm sure. So anyway, we're making friends with anybody that was available. And Andy, I think the guy was called, was the leader of that lot. And of course, I was just pleased to tag along and be friendly. Well, I found myself outside the phone box. He was taking notes, following people. And that's how they played around there when they got time. Follow people, see what they do, and take notes. Well, the reason that interested is because David, God rest his soul, he just died recently. I couldn't make a funeral through a bout of illness. Terrible upset stomach. I'd eaten something nasty. Had a bout of sickness. Let the whole family down by not being able to get there. Couldn't be helped. But I read the thing of the guy there, a story about the person these days that dies, right? And he used to go to the Westfield Club in Benwell on the West Road there. Every Sunday, apparently. And stand at the bus stop and see another lady on the bus without speaking, just sort of offer a cover type thing without anybody knowing anything about it. I think it reads that way. Well, I thought of that event in Rainham with the kids there following people around and taking notes. I don't know what it possibly means, but anyway, it brought that to mind. The similar area to where he used to live, in actual fact, not far from the Westerhope area. I'm putting Rob Stationer on. Lady Gaga's on Twitter a lot, just I'm trying to chromium, what do you mean, call it to her? Yeah? I'm full of ideas for sending pokes off on Twitter for her. I don't know if it's a good idea, she looks very busy. Things like the greatest thing, I've tweeted the greatest thing today, the song. The lyrics in there struck us, hey, can you believe it? I've been accused of misbehaving. You can't tell a 64-year-old man is misbehaving. I mean, you can't tell him that. You can it? Anyway, life goes on. I've got to make this repair. David Bowie sprung to mind there as well with Mick Ronson on a tweet doing some sort of guitar act. You know, I see these eyes of green. Green like jungle. Blurring. Well, that's not the right. I don't mess Bowie's lyrics up with the lyrics. I do ad lib a lot with Bowie's stuff, like. But not publicly in that sense, where it could be, you know, misunderstood indirectly or misconceived deliberately, that sort of thing, you know. It's not the same as the artistic approach where you're involved one way or another and things are different like that. But yeah, that tweet struck us as the lad changed into a man. He was in some guitar act with Mick Ronson, doing some chords and, you know, getting right down on his honkers and up again, like he was really into the music, and it just dawned on me there about half an hour ago. It's the game, you know, a child turned to a man, or the man that does what he's told by women and grows old, and the child thing doesn't grow into a man because it's too difficult. Now, see, let's just say I make that, and then there's David Bowie in his next life. He's got good reason to live into an old age, hasn't he? So that's why I mentioned the scene of these eyes of green. So we came back from Rainham, right, after a couple of years, seeing the footballers, the part-timers, Gillingham FC, events. It was a friendly place, like, some good things went on there. You know, fates, pillar fights on grease pools, that sort of thing, and races, and even stroke picking, I enjoyed that, to be honest. To me, there was nothing out of the ordinary about that. Now, although it might feel a bit differently, going to make a bit extra money and pick the strawberries and that, but then it was just a pleasure, to carry on, something to do on Sunday or something, you know, apart from sit around the house and watch the Sunday matinee, the Sunday film, Cheyenne or whatever was on. I made some good friends there, I'd like to say. I'd never sure I shouldn't. But I came back for 2 years, and I was really happy to get back to Newcastle. I pulled Newcastle, a sick centre had been built. All blue lit up. And I loved seeing that, and I wanted to have a drive around. We'd been just on the motorway, coming back travelling, you know, in the back of the Minch Traveller. With the old man there driving like a maniac, flat out to get back to Newcastle, you know. I mean, I didn't say let's have a look around, I was just hoping to have a look around before I went straight to the house, but no, I wanted to go around the old home to see Grange Estate, I love new areas, or anywhere, just have a look around, you know. Even though it was a long time of day, it was about what it must have been really early, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, that sort of time, 5 o'clock, really early. Went straight to the house and I was a bit dismayed. It was a bit of a Coronation Street scene. We came from nice 70-touch council premises on both occasions and the Hollywood Avenue. But how about changed my way of viewing things like that house eventually? At first I thought, oh wait, what's going on here? Well, I did a downward step on me to myself. But actually, my view as the years went by, a school was at the bottom of the street, a junior school, which was good. From there, of course, I went to secondary school, Gosworthy Secondary School. That was good. Things What could you mention about him then? Yeah, George had my sweet lord. Sweet blockbuster. Rod Stewart, Maggie May. All the hip-hop tunes out then. Tony Blackburn. Morning Breakfast Show. I didn't do that well at school, I didn't start to take exams. I changed to high school the last year of our, what do you call it, of our term at school, yeah, was went up to 16 from 15. So before my age, everybody a year older than me left at 15. My age stayed on to 16. Which I wouldn't have minded if I was in the position of taking O-levels and all that sort of thing. I wasn't in that sort of position because of this or that, you know, it's that type of thing. Just now that we're going to have force people to listen to. Maybe later, we'll see how things go. Like I say, I've got this recording digital device here. I've got to have a test of it. And from there, youth clubs, you know, scouts I've been in earlier before the youth club. I enjoyed the scouts. I had learned a lot in the scouts. It wasn't really my scene, I thought. You know, I'd been friends with a guy at the junior school, Michael Dougal. He was in the scouts, you know. I can't remember how I ended up going there, whether it was me asking him or him suggesting I come out, I don't know, I can't remember. However, I didn't think it was really my scene, the scouts, but I enjoyed learning a lot in the scouts. You get some excellent holidays. Camping holidays are great, you know, we go camping in Scotland and abroad and other places. It's a good scene, the Scouts, but they stopped it now, Baden Powell and all that. It's out the window, there's no more Boy Scouts anymore, you know. I don't know what the reason is. There'll be some reason for it, but it's an excellent thing, like. And of course, I went to work, I said, I was working Saturday with my dad. My dad had a good job, manager of a hardware shop in Newcastle. If you remember Coronation Street, we've already mentioned that, haven't we? Well, one of the girls, ladies off there came to the opening. I didn't go along for the opening, I went to the new shop. Before they built the new shop in Malden Square, you call it. It was just black on Black Street, the shop. It was a good shop, like massive, loads of floors, you know. There was a second floor for selling wood to people. Third floor for cutting keys and cutting wood. I think there was fourth floor for staff to go and have tea breaks and that sort of thing. And an attic, you know, where all the stocks were, which actually came up then. About that sort of time, my dad got this terrible guitar. I mean, crazy, what a... It had a lovely smell about it, right? And it was an acoustic thing with strings a mile off the fretboard. I had no chance of learning to play it properly. I should play like, say, G, and presumably would just start making the tune itself, you know? Strummer rattled through a chord, two or three chords. I had no idea, man. No idea at all. But I stayed on an occasion in the Black Street shop in Basher and that, and I enjoyed that shop. Like I said, I got some of my friends a job on Saturdays as well, with a little bit of money, you know, and the old man was good in that vein. Like, he would pay me for Saturday work on a Saturday, and you'd pay one or two of my school friends for helping out as well, a new shop especially, and there was a hood who'd get there, Brian Rummer. I had a great laugh at him, battling with the curtain rails. Cootie, Rob Thompson was there, Leachy was there. Yeah, God knows what went on. On the fiddle side, you know, that sort of thing. I don't know. But before the end of the case, like before I was married off and away in my first marriage, the shop was finished. The window had been bust for some reason, the front window. Elgin Square was being built, was my dad's reason for not continuing, because they couldn't. There was nobody shopping around the area with them both in Eldon Square, and they considered him getting bank loans and keeping it on until the Eldon Square was finished and built and all that and returned to normal for shoppers, you know, which would have been a much better event for everybody, I think, if he'd done that. he was talking on the Big Brother about dating services for the ladies, or buying a hotel in Whitley Bay, you know. And I wasn't involved in having a, you know, my ideas wouldn't be accepted, whatever they were. I mean, you see that at the time, you know. And I was certainly asking David, what do you think? And I wasn't involved in having any ideas, you know. Quite strange, really. So I was off to the first marriage about that sort of time as well. Was he still running that shop when I got married? I was working in a garage anyway, an apprentice. The pay was abysmal. £8, £15, stayed that way for eons. £30, I left around about that sort of time for 3.5 years, man. The pay was the lowest you could imagine of all the workers. I mean, I always get school friends coming up to see us, right? Driving a Triumph Vitesse, you know, a 2 litre Triumph Herald thing. And the other one was Suzuki's 380 motorbike. And things like that, you know. And they were working, and that's what they're spending their pay on, you know. I was getting like £8 up to £16 for ages. It went £30. You know, living on next to nothing. Which was the story of my life as it went on. It wasn't just a case there, it went on that way. It's the story of my life. That marriage actually finished when I was about 21. I was working in a factory about 21, wasn't I? Me and the next door neighbour, I had to get a job in a hurry. Stay sane, I keep out of trouble. And I got a job in a factory in Gosforth, yeah, but it didn't last that long. I had a nice holiday in France, out to France with some friends from Gosforth. And a work colleague from the factory. And I think I was there about 3 years. Quite a long stint, really. Yeah, so Peter, who had started working in the factory, like Louis, a little kid from Palmersville, was a good friend at that age. At that age, he was a great friend, full of beans, you know. Was his insistent that, you know, I could do much, much better and should get, you know, he came to see us and said, "Kill, I'd finished in the factory, we got sacked for leaving work early." Tony, a good friend from the garage, I got him a job. The foreman said, "Have you got any friends that want a job?" I said, "I might have one." And I phoned up Tony Reeves from the garage, he was still working there, and asked me if we wanted a job. He asked about the PS, that's kind of good. He said, "What's it like?" I said, "Doddle, easy as pie." And he says, "Okay." He says, "I want to help you." He said, "I'll take the job, get us in." So I got Tony a job, like. But he got sick, he slapped this guy in the back of the neck. And this guy was getting a drink of coffee out of the drinks machine, right? And then when you have your tea break. And Tony was a bit of a villain in that way, like. Slapped the guy in the back of the neck. And the guy turned around and attacked him. You know, this guy was older than us, you know? But I was sitting next to Tony, like. Tony said, "For some reason, he slapped this guy in the back." You got Tony to do that sort of thing, that sort of kid. And he slapped the guy in the back of the neck, but the guy took a fit and turned around and attacked him, right? Well, Tony got the sack for that. I got the sack for leaving work early on a Friday or something. I left work early. I honestly couldn't stand the place. Well, the pay was good, but I couldn't. I wasn't sure how much longer I'd keep it up. It was, you know, just not for me, really. Like, you know, covered in spray paint, electrostatic, you know, so it sticks to your magnetic in the paint. In overalls and boots, whatever, yeah, all clothes also. Well, you know, there's nothing there. It was interesting in a sense. I had to have a job at that time and I took it to keep out of trouble, right? But it didn't last long. I was separated from the first wife. I was living back with my dad there in Gosforth, going weight training, trying to develop a bit of a chest for the beach on Sundays and nothing special, like. Good intermediate weight training, doing some quite heavy squats. 400 pound, or 2 to 400 pound squat, which I thought was good. The lad I was training with then went on to win a Mr. North Britain contest, bodybuilding contest. Yeah. Went into business after that. He got a job doing cake. He started making cakes in the kitchen, selling cake after I'd been in that show. And, you know, I think the matching was well looked after by the town, like, for, well, Mr. North Britain. It's a big trophy, isn't it? I'm driving taxis last time I see him, you know, just works when he wants, sticks his banner on the top and drives around and behaves how he wants to. Yeah. Me and my daughter, can you believe that? He was the godfather for the first daughter. Somehow he's in with my daughters and that, you know. It's a real strange, bizarre turn of events. I don't know how it's taking place, to be honest. It's not going on to this tale here, but we've already, mentioned there's a chance of this being set up, being that all sorts of things were skidded by. Now, Holiday and Nisa, one about those was good for the fact, and about that time, I couldn't go any further with weight training. I'd done a 400-pound squat. Louis was suggesting, we start a band. I was suggesting we start a band, or vice versa. Both into the same sort of thing, the Stranglers and that, had the right words. And we're both very interested in the same sort of things. Although he was younger than me, which is a big thing. Yeah, it's not as you get older. Age doesn't matter when you get older. I was just saying here, 64, right? And they're trying to say I've misbehaved. I don't see anybody all day long. Somebody comes in for 10 minutes, four times a day, hubs in the bed, hubs out of bed. And they're trying to pin a misbehaving rap on us. Not talking correctly to this dude that wants to... You come in full of beans, right? Joking and mocking. And I've returned the tables on him. And he's ran off telling tales on us. And they've come in down on us with a misbehaviour rap. Can you believe you can't tell a 64-year-old man he's misbehaving? I mean, you can't tell him that. So from the band, the Lou, I enjoyed that stuff. I was in Woodley Bay then, 1983. Last chance at life. Put a band together and get on the road. I wasn't aware how terribly injured I was. There's no chance, looking back there now, there is no chance at all of me making it in a band. Injuries I've been given, my knee and ankle and chest, everything, all over my boy. Well, not just that. Maybe, so I've just been seeing that David Bowie and Mick Ronson thing I was on about there, changing from boyhood to manhood, and whereas you've got men who do what they're told by women and grow old, There's two, the black and white side of life, So, with my stretching myself out to man size, it made us conjure up this image of David Bowie. I seen it today, just today on Twitter, which I didn't, I just thought it was a bit silly at first, but I didn't think that way of David Bowie, But it struck us later on the day that, he's going to live longer in his next life. He's not going to have that, And then I thought of that song, City's Eyes of Red. Red and burning bright, I could live for 1,000 years. Well, that's a good song, isn't it? So many times I mentioned that, as we go along. So the band, yes, I enjoyed the last chance. It was at 3.5 years of proper living, pleasure. 3.5 years old, my full life up to then, and after. That's which isn't fair, because the second wife, I had a great time, the second wife. And the bridesmaid Mary and Linda Potts and Shirley Bourne, our friends would come around, you could say every day, Mary was around every single day. It's not fair to say Linda and Shirley around every day, but you could mention that was good as that way, but four girls was too much. Three, I would just cope with Susan, Mary and Linda, I just cope with four, you kind of cope with four girls, man. We were living in one room, man. One room in the kitchen, Mary was, excellent about the whole thing. She was coming over every day. She was in a hostel, Mary. But brilliant talk, intelligent woman. Held the show together through it all. And then, till, of course, we didn't have any money. Susan was on a 200-pound, a 200 cigarette smoke a week event. That was her way of keeping the game on. You've got to have some sort of game going. She was living on tea and 200 cigarettes a week, I had no money as usual. Mary would give Susan a fiver every week, trying to help her out. Because she was sitting around, she was saying, no, that's because I'm sitting around in the house every day. But life, man, we've never had any money until recently. when they threw the money at us in the big lamp, and I went to open the big lamp with me and Susan, eventually got back from Haste, and we were being living in the drive and homeless, and the car wouldn't give her a house anywhere, wouldn't give her proper money. And like I said, I've mentioned this before, you know, on a tale somewhere in writing, that's what's caused us to leave lots of things out, which isn't important, because, like I say, I'm willing to jot backwards and forwards, and some of the time, it might be interesting to percolate some of these questions that are arose, you know. But Susan and me had been kept homeless for 5 years, completely ruined our marriage, and never had any money. That's why I've had to leave Critters Park. And perhaps that life was finishing anyway. I had 4.5 years, excellent fun. I lived, enjoyed every day, every moment of the whole thing, apart from we couldn't afford to live, buy food or do anything, you know. She was, like I say, surviving on 200 cigarettes a week with Mary on the same game and tea, you know. And I was getting over the problem. I was in this sort of normal life as a guy that age would, you know, get down the pub on a Friday, get a bottle of wine on another day, have a blow, like, you know, and living with the girls. Really, in one sense, you couldn't ask for any more than that, you know. I'm just saying, we never had any money then. And they wouldn't, after we left there, they wouldn't house her anywhere, wouldn't give her any money. 5 years, homelessness, come 6 months here or 6 months there. We go to places, right, and we'd phone up Newcastle. He came back to see us from the council, wherever we were, London or wherever, you know, Durham, anywhere, wherever we were. And they come back and say, now we've been on to the council in Newcastle, you've got a house there, you've got to go back, you've got to live there, you've got to have a house, you've got a house already in Newcastle. So I think, oh, that's dandy, because I'm not giving one. It was the same tale I went on wherever we went. And every time I came back to Newcastle, we couldn't get the house, we couldn't get anywhere, it wouldn't give anywhere to live. So eventually it did come to an end, you know, we could put in some temporary accommodation in Newcastle eventually. Susan seemed to be, I didn't notice at the time, and never, I had no idea. I had Rolling Stones tape from the library and a Kate Bush tape from the library, that was our entertainment. And we're sitting with a bottle of wine, you know, which once a week we could afford a bottle of wine, we had no money as usual. I mean, what about the Christmas stuff, man? The guys brought round the old sandwiches from Marks and Spencer's that they couldn't sell, that were left over. He says, there's nothing wrong with them, have these for your Christmas dinner. We never had any money, you see, we couldn't give away any pay. So, like I say, I hadn't noticed at the time that Susan was obviously going to top herself one way or another, God knows how. Because I never noticed, looking back I noticed. Drinking the wine with a bottle of wine, she, you know, the proper wine, it wasn't an act, like, was it? She was wanting the wine to finish it. I said, no, Susan, I've got to have a drink, I wouldn't drink that. She didn't know who had a big battle over this bottle of wine, like, you know. It was really funny, like a real thing. But looking back at it, I realised, oh, she was going to top herself. Like, on the next day, right, the very next day, the doctor came in with two social workers and says, listen, I'm putting you on the proper money. I'm going to put increase the money to the, what's it called, you know, we get the proper money, the full what, like, you know. And so he done that, right? And as soon as they'd done it, we got chucked out more or less. I put somebody in a boat with a bang and bang and bang on the ceiling and scraped chairs around, threw furniture and threw fits at the door and all that. Like, oh, crikey. The money hadn't come through. So we had to leave, right? Because they were crazy, that's what they'd done, they'd give the money and made sure we had to get out. I wonder about you being lucky as anything. There was a card in the shop window which was offering accommodation, like, you know. And the woman was pretty good about it. Says, when you're on the wing, I says, oh, straight away, man. I says, we've just been given a disablement benefit thing, a proper payment. We're waiting for it to come through. We're really, you know, that creek without a paddle, like. And she says, well, okay, go up and get your things now, let you move in, you know, and then it better be okay with the council and that, and when you get your money, you know, all that sort of thing. So I was happy as Larry. Susan and me went up and got with things, like, you know, dodgy, like, because there's a carry-on there, this dude upstairs throwing furniture around, like a blimmin' next jailbird or something, God knows who they moved in. But anyway, we got our stuff out, and we came back down, and when we came to the house, right, the guy that she had working for, a young lad, was doing detective work, right, doing a business, doing detective work, and I had a chat with him, right, about who I knew from what he'd been, and all that sort of thing. And he wasn't willing to move in. He changed his mind. He says, no, I don't think it's the right idea and all that. Well, Susan sort of burst out in tears, not doubting, and no, I don't mean blaming and bawling, but she was like, tears starting to show on Susan, and the guy says, oh no, it's okay, you can move in. So we moved in like there, and we got a flat in colour codes after a few weeks. It was another big mistake, because the guy downstairs in the shop was intolerable. Kept knocking the door, insisting he wanted to come in the house and have a look around and try and pick on Susan and all that, you know. And it was a real weird experience. So we ended up back on the streets again, and we never had any benefits from getting more money, because it went on rent, we had to put a down payment on the flat. That disappeared. We'd never been paid any money for the accommodation that we'd gotten with the base, so we lost a fortune there as well. Nothing had went in the bank, we couldn't pay anybody. We owed a fortune from the Whitney Bay at that time. Like, I used to think about it, hey, what's the fortune, what are they going to do about it? Anyway, it all got left in the past and forgotten about, as you can imagine, as the years went by. But we're still in a new money situation, right? Roaming the streets, couldn't find anywhere to live with. We found a place in North Shields where the wife, I think, apparently attacked Susan when I was out. The woman that owned it, Susan could be funny, like, you know, she's a strange case, Susan, like, on occasion. And then I've been talking to this woman, she was okay, like, you know, with me. Like, no, I didn't bet this going to be before, and was part of the scene that was going on there. But when I was out, apparently she attacked Susan for some reason, like, this. I thought, oh no, how am I going to find her? And I went out to North Shields and found her coming out of the unemployment office. And lucky as anything, I found her coming out of the unemployment office and got a place in Consett. And I knew the hotel there, and it was like we were finished, you know. She was talking to a guy that was repairing televisions. And we were in this terrible position with no money as usual, right? And somebody I seen beside me, she seemed to be sort of willing to go off this guy. And I couldn't believe it. We had such an intense, close relationship, you know. I mean, really intense, close relationship. So anyway, I went to Newcastle one week. I got some money, came through, right? When I was in a position, I went to Newcastle and went to a garage I knew and bought a car. Came back to get, spent all the money that we'd get on the car, and probably the insurance, I can't remember that side of it, but I wouldn't be stupid enough to drive that the way we used to be chased by people. And then we took off from Consett. The marriage was falling apart, you know, in a sense. And we took off in the Sierra, the Ford Sierra, Blue Ford Sierra, and I can't quite remember where I went. Well, I tottered around here and there, not far. Went to the Midlands and that, Doncaster. That was a nice car, wasn't it? Did we go back there in the Vauxhall Cavalry? That was a nice car. But Susan disappeared. We got set up in Benwell, right? And we came back travelling in the Sierra. And we got set up in Benwell. And we had nowhere to sleep the night before. The night before we were there, and Susan wanted to be out of the car to go for a pee. And I couldn't just control herself, you know, or a bit. It look her head then, you know, and she'd met a woman she knew from the corner shop in Elswick, Cartoon, and got a shop in Salters Road. And I was working in Salters Road, and I said, well, go to Cartoon shop in the car park, you know, in the corner, just next to the shop, on Salters Road. It's changed now, they've modernised the place, and car parks are there. Put across the hotel across the road. And we were in there, I said, Susan, man, go see Cartoon, you do it terribly. Well, she never came back. I was sitting for ages in the car, gorgeous, done off, like. And I went to Cartoon, I can't remember now what Cartoon said, I can't remember what she said. Because she's pretty pally with me, like, you know, she's a bit younger than Susan, and she's pretty pally. But I said, well, Susan, I'll be honest, I can't really even remember what was said now. But Susan disappeared, I was all over, I phoned the police, and now I was on the phone to the police. I said, my wife's disappeared, man. I said, we're getting a house tomorrow, I know that, yeah. And eventually we found her in a place somewhere over the Durham area, in a hostel retreat place. God knows what it's. I couldn't get tails out of Susan. She wouldn't spill the beans, like, what's going on. And I took the flat the next day, and the guy was a bit dubious. He says, well, where's your wife? I said, she's coming, she's busy, she's got this to do, all that to do, you know. Probably, when I think about it, I probably hadn't found it the next day, you know, till that day or something. Or was to pick up that night or something like that. Yeah, I knew she was coming because I was telling him. I said, no, everything's okay, the wife's here as well, she's on her way, this is happening, or that's happening. And he goes, Anyway, let's move in, and we moved in there. But it didn't last long. The hardware cable went on the car, right, on this hill, living on the hill. Soon disappeared, going to the garage one night. They took it off in ambulances. So they'd already taken her off in ambulance once to the general hospital. Oh, what's going on here? He says, I want to come home. I says, you want to come home? I couldn't understand why she went in there. You know, I went out to the shop or something. I came back, took her away in ambulance to the general hospital. And I went and took her some things in. I dressing down nightly and some things you might want to read, you know. Magazine-y type of thing, drone stuff and that sort of thing. You know what you do with people in hospital? Because I didn't know what was wrong there. And she says, oh, for God's sake, man, get out of here. I can't stay in here. She says, they're not right, man. Well, I couldn't get the story out about what was going on, like, you know. So we went to Whitley Bay in the car, and we came back. And the police stopped the car and said, oh, Dean, arrested us for some reason. No explanation. Well, come back from Asda, right? Had the groceries in the boot. And the police arrested us for no reason at all and threw us in a cell, almost killed us. I had to invent a game to keep myself sane with an empty cigarette box, some stupid caper, to try and keep myself sane. I also would have been in one of those cases, oh, he's hung himself in prison cases. You know, there was no reason to arrest us. They just stopped the car and took it in on some sort of God knows what, driving ticket thing or something, supposed to God knows. Nothing, because the next day I got turfed out. The groceries were ruined in the boot, the car was in the back lane. And I went to him and Susan was still in the house. I was really surprised she was still in the house, you know what I mean? I think the idea was to do away with me, right? Not her, but the police attempting murderers, you know? That's what I think it was, looking at it. It sort of slipped me in memory in a way, but the conversations led to that, you know what I mean? Because what I was going to say was, about that time or thereafter, it must have been after that, she went to the late night garage to get a box of cigarettes. And they took her off to said she was hospital. In an ambulance. I thought, what the hell's going on? Every time she goes out, they caught her off in an ambulance to hospital. Every time she goes out. And they all went with girls, like, you know, with her girls, like, the shops and that, like, wherever she goes, the girls are in the area. See, so she's mad, like, you know, she's got to, for being with me, I mean, you know, and she's got to go to hospital. And they caught her off in an ambulance, they threatened her and bully her into going off in an ambulance. Well, I went to Sedgefield in the car, even miles away, it's in somewhere in the Durham area, where Tony Blair was from, in it, and the race course, Sedgefield races. And there's a hospital, the Winton Hospital was there, you know, and she wanted to come home. I said, what the hell, how we end up here? She wouldn't spill the beans there, I don't know what the story was. But there was one of the nurses in with her, because she's from Durham area as well, and that hospital's from the Durham area, Susan's from Durham, you know. She starts slapping her face. I was lucky as anything, because I had a strangler take my hand, and I says, here, hold that. And it stopped her from being insane, slapping her face. You know, like a mad ex slapping her face, and she's doing something terribly wrong, you know. But she doesn't know what to do, because every time she was going out, wherever we lived, or caught her off in a friggin' ambulance to hospital, you know. Making her go away, like saying, you know, trying to tell her she's mad, or her husband's mad, or God knows what, you know, mom, we're just trying to get on with her life, like, you know what I mean, not make any trouble. Like here, for instance, another perfect example, he's misbehaving. I don't do anything at all other than run my web station, and nothing. And they're trying to throw a misbehaving representation onto us. You can't tell a 64-year-old man. He's misbehaving. Well, for a start, he doesn't even talk to anybody all day. When the guy comes to put us to bed, I think he come in full of tales and mockery and wisecracks and all that. And well, I've taken him up. You know what I mean? And turn the tables around him, he's running off crying his eyes out, telling tales and making reports, saying I'm being sarcastic to him and all this sort of thing. And I've had to face that. So they all decide to come down on me, right? As I'm misbehaving. Have you heard anything like it? You can't tell a 64-year-old man he's misbehaving because... Well, I don't want to say that again because I don't like involving twits like him, you know what I mean? He's become daft, John. I mean, you've got Geordies, right? Geordie isn't stupid. Geordie has a dafty, right? A daft whatever, a daft this, or a daft no, like you've probably heard it before. Well, he's daft John. You know what I mean? You can't say Geordie to Geordie. If he wants to go off and run on like that, then he's a dafty. Now, my joke isn't stupid. You know, he's caused a person daft for a reason. Well, I found out that's the reason. He's daft Joan. And he can't tell Geordie any other different. I mean, Geordie can say what he wants. Do you know what I mean? He's running away with tales that I've said this. And I've called him Tubby. But he says Fatty. I called him Tubby Red. He says he's run off and saying he's called us Fatty. You know, and telling the other girls to put things in the book about us and this. And which t-shirt do I put on the desk? Just give us the one you've got your hand on, right? So he ran off and got the girl out of the kitchen and says he's at it again, his attitude. I can't see what's wrong saying just give us the one you've got your hand on. I can't see anything wrong with that, you know? So anyway, but they're all, he was one of their teenies, I found out the day when the girl came on some sort of spot check, yeah, she came out with. And I realised they're all to come down on me with the idea I'm misbehaving. I don't even talk to anybody, you know? And I'm setting cheek up or something. It's a bit, anyway, it's a very strange, bizarre, just that sort of thing, you know, I've just been about having no money and all that, and Susan getting caught enough to mental hospitals, I don't show that house by herself, that sort of thing. It's that sort of vein continuing, you know, buoyant of manhood, and whereas you've got the old man who does what he's told by her and grows old. And the kids when the streets don't grow into men, you know, so they've got Barry doing that thing on his hunkers and Mick Ronson. Next time he's going to be living a bit longer, you know, which is good, like I like that, you know. That's the way I looked at just now. So Susan and me went from there in a car, the book was open. Please follow me out of Newcastle, out of the garage, didn't stop for the book being open. That was strange. And I got filled up with petrol in the garage at the end of Gateshead and set off the motor. I noticed the boot was open. I thought, well, that was strange. Police just ignored that. Very unusual. So anyway, we went down. Oh, yeah, they called the death trap, I've just remembered. When we got the Hastings, I went for the MOT, the Audi, right? It was a strange, peculiar looking Audi thing. Not the Audi Quattro, nothing like that. It was a four-door Cortina looking thing. And the guy in the garage says, hey man, I can't let you have that, it's a death trap. He says, well, send you a class, it's a death trap. No, well, the arm inside the bonnet, which attached to the wheel, with arm keys, right, going round and round, you know, the spindle thing that gathers the income of the engine and drives the wheels, kept coming loose. I keep stopping every hour or something, you know, tightening up. I got an arm key and tried to tighten it, but still wouldn't stay tight, kept coming loose, you know. So one of them would see, like, he said, well, not just that, he says, that's a death trap, he chiseled under the doors where it was all bad, yeah? And I says, well, what am I going to do? He said, well, can't you have that? That's a flaming death trap, man. So then I realised, well, the police didn't bother stopping on the motorway with the boot lid open. And that made sense to us suddenly, you know? So we got a great call from Hastings, the kids there, the students, you know, give us fantastic Vauxhall 1600 Cavalier, like, for sale on the streets. Brilliant, it was like a brand new car, it hadn't been used, kept in garage condition, you know, and just customised a little bit, you know. It had the spoiler on the boot lid, and it was good, I can see it's a radio cassette player, sunroof, with a 1600 GL, it was a brilliant car, went all over Britain, Susan May went all over Britain in that. Just to buy ourselves, just to keep it away from these blooming loonies, man, you know, we didn't let we live anywhere, we didn't let we have any money, and as soon as we got a house on the car to off to hospitals, we wouldn't give a house, we didn't let we live anywhere, you know. So, eventually, we done the run, right, all over Scotland, all over England, everywhere, and it just made sense that if we carry on, we're going to end up in a write-off. Yes, we've won the game, like won the driving game. They can't get off anything. They're trying to trump up charges, make park on offences and that sort of thing. They kind of get away with anything. I said, it makes sense. We may as well go up the temporary accommodation, try and get housed for the last time off them, see what they won. I haven't got a choice that we are saying because we've won the game, you see. Won the driving game, like, you know. So that's what happened. We went in and then they had a court session laid on to driving offences that trumped up, right? And the guy, the solicitor, says, hey, it seems to be dangerous driving, they're trying to land on you. He says, you could get away for it. And Susan broke down, thanks, honest, I drew up. I was like an angel on the whole thing. I never broke the law once, right? They kept coming in on me with trumped up charges, produce us documents, new insurance ideas and all that, right? None of it was right. And that's what they're trying to throw me. Susan knew that, you know, and I drive, never went over the speed limit or anything. I drove perfectly the whole time. They were going around like maniacs, taxi drivers and all sorts, going around like maniacs, right? Trying to win the driving game. And Susan broke down crying through because she knew that, you know, I drove like an angel, like, you know, I never made a single mistake, right? And won the game, right? Got what housed. And that was how they what they finished off by, you know, hanging in the cling through the trumped up charges. But Susan was broke down in front of the sausage. Because what else could you do, you know what I mean? And they said, oh no, Susan, no Susan, I'll see to it. So he jumped up like that and said, no, you'll be okay, Susan. You're all right, I'll see to it. So anyway, he got his speech session with the judge and jury, whatever was there. He says, no, blah, blah, blah. And everything, I thought it was going to be okay by the way he was talking, like, you know. And took my license office for a year. I lost my driving license for a year, and that's when I got into the Windows 98. It was 99 then, we got the house in the Big Lamp, right, in Elvick, Big Lamp. From the temporary house place, got the right house, like, you know, it's all part of it. And when Susan started going missing immediately, we wouldn't get any help from anywhere, right? After Susan's got in there, the hospitals wanted to come in to investigate the premises and see how Susan was and all that. They never showed any interest whatsoever on our homeless. As soon as we got in the house, they wanted to be in, checking everything out, and seeing what condition Susan was in and all that. They didn't care before one more homeless, but wouldn't give her a house anymore. They had to win the game, right? So they had to give her this top house, as far as I was kind of looked out. So I'm from Newcastle, you know what I mean? So the Big Lamp, the top area, as far as I was concerned, detached flat, it was a great place. Like, I was there 20 years when, before I got into this routine, what was going on here, but I fixed myself, you see. So before I got in there, what was going on here? To the hospital, I couldn't walk anymore, I couldn't get the groceries in. So I had to go to the hospital, I thought the social worker said, yes, we'll take you to the hospital and get you assessed. So I went there and the retina would have 2 weeks to live, when I get a lumbar puncture and all sorts of stuff for brain disorders. I said, so you're mad, mister. I said, I haven't got a clue what you're talking about. I said, I'm not having a frigging lumbar puncture, are you stupid or something? I said, I've got to repair myself, I've been doing martial arts, man, since 98 it was, when the World Cup was on. We're living in Benmore, me and Susan were living in Benmore. When the World Cup started, 98. I decided to get into Bruce Lee again, which conjured up the idea, well, listen, I'm going to pull some out of the bag. Yeah, I'm not having these pick on me, continuing like this. No, I get the magic side of the Kung Fu element. I mean, they won't accept the music. The music was ineffective for them. We didn't care, they don't listen to music. I mean, well, now they're the masks out, haven't they? The COVID virus thing and the mask, everyone has to walk around with the mask on. You got to laugh at it now. I mean, Lady Gaga's doing a concert all over a massive crowd. There's no sign of masks anywhere, is there? Yet you've still got these fence and their masks and God knows what the cape are supposed to be. So it's the game side of life, you see. So I've just been around and bullying that and throwing Susan in mental hospitals and my misbehaving and all that. You know, that's the game element. It was what we've strode into. I was just wanting to test out my machine here, basically, right? You know, my recording machine, I'm just getting. A day or two later, it came mysteriously. It was written in and it's delivered. It came a couple of days later, after getting in touch with Amazon. Apparently it's been delivered. There's no sign of anywhere, but it came 2 days later. Odd, yeah, it's the old oddball thing, you know. And from there, 20 years, like I say, we'll talk about more in detail about that some time, perhaps. It's that drinking thing, and Susan was away, and all the rest of it. But from there, I went to the place I was at before this. One nurse has confided in us and says, you're only supposed to be here for 2 weeks, you've been here 6 months. So brought us here, there's a little bit of flat with God knows getting arrangements. I don't know what the social side of things are, the ridiculous events of our social worker after social worker, the whole team, different people asking the same story because they didn't know anything, because she's just taken over from the personality before, she doesn't know. So I went to the whole team with that story, right, that relate the whole tale to them about living here and all that, and where I came, what about the furniture in the old house and all that sort of thing. The same story for this through the whole team of social services, who once I've got in here, I've disappeared, and God knows, you know, I can't fix anything up, there was no response any longer, you know. And I've been landed on with the misbehaviour rap, because there's nothing else that gets right now. I'm in here all day by myself, just with a web station affair, you know, not mixing on the anyway, I can't walk, you see, I'm in a wheelchair. So with them being unable to throw anything on us, like nothing at all, well, nothing on us, right? So try to come with a misbehaviour rap. I'm going to end this here because that's where I was insane. Like, yeah, jumping backwards and forwards, I could go back here and talk about that, but it's not like for a tester, which is always supposed to be the tester of this device. I'm going to forget how to save it first. Like that, and it's just something to listen to for me. It's nothing about anything, really. No, there's nothing I'm trying to achieve, nothing I'm trying to say about anything. I mean, I can't test this device, I have something to talk about. But maybe it will lead us into some idea, we'll see. Because that's what it's all about. And songs, I can't mean enough for MP3s. But for songs or some tale I might want to upload somewhere. Recording songs off the piano. And perhaps a better version of recording and using the Tascam, I've just got that sort of thing. See, I'm busy, you know what I mean? I'm not interested in what they want as me. To be some sort of retard with this guy who comes to want to put us to bed. Do you want your tablets and all that sort of thing? And, you know, Daft John. Like I said, you can't tell Geordie, man. Geordie's got a name for him. And the name's Daft John. You know what I mean? Geordie can say what he wants. So he's coming to me with this Geordie thing, right? That he's the ex-HOD carrier, Max Wall thing, you know, full of jokes. And if this happens, if, you know, if there's a plane crash here where there's fireworks get buried and all, them type of friggin' jokes, you know? Stupidity. And because I would land, I don't know, I'm a serious type of thing when it comes to some carry-on like that, you know? He's run off telling tales and making reports. And I said to the girl this morning, I said, listen, you know, it seems to me he's 4 years younger than me and he can't tolerate it. He can't live with it. You know, he's like an old man, you know, he's grown old before his time. You know, boy. You know, I'm still in youth, right? Got to repair myself. I'm damaged, badly damaged, disabled, but I'm still in youth, right? It seems to me he's 4 years younger and can't stand it. He's running around telling tales and going on like a blimmin' nitwit. That sort of something like along them lines, eh? And then it wasn't until afterwards I realised that's besides the point. Because he's part of their team, and it's the team coming down with a misbehavioural rap. So it doesn't matter what you say, really. That's to their move, like, you know what I mean? But anyway, I'm going to save this. And see as we go, is what now we're going.